This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden returned home Thursday evening from a European trip aimed at showing unity against Russia's invasion against Ukraine. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has the story.
As he left Finland, NATO's newest member, the president said the war is not only about Ukraine's future.
It's about sovereignty, security, and freedom itself.
Saying NATO is more united than ever after a summit in Lithuania, where it pledged long-term backing for Ukraine. He also bristled when asked if America will remain a reliable NATO partner.
I absolutely guarantee it.
Later adding, while nobody can guarantee the future,
but this is the best bet anyone could make.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
A new report released by the United Nations Thursday says the world is making progress towards ending AIDS. Angeli Acharika is the executive director of UNAIDS.
So progress is possible, but progress is not happening everywhere and not for everyone. There are gaps in the response in countries, in communities, and among certain populations, including children, adolescent girls and young women, and key populations.
While new infections have been declining globally over the past 10 to 12 years, rates remain high in several regions. Despite the encouraging report, Archika says more needs to be done to end AIDS across the globe. The UN Security Council met late Thursday to discuss North Korea's launch of its newest intercontinental ballistic missile a day earlier, but remained divided over taking action. Pyongyang has launched 20 ballistic missiles so far this year. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Unionized actors have voted to strike after failing to reach a contract with studios. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta has that story.
The Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Radio and Television Artists, say it voted to strike after negotiations failed over pay increases, streaming residuals, and artificial intelligence issues. Union President Fran Drescher says it was a move of last resort.
This is where we drew the line in the sand, and it's a terrible thing to have to do. But we were forced into it.
The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers say in a statement it was the actors union's choice to dismiss its offer. The actors will join Hollywood screenwriters who have been on strike since early May. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Syria said Thursday it would allow the United Nations the temporary use of a border crossing with Turkey to reach millions of Syrians living in areas outside of the government's control. Use of the Bab al-Hawa border crossing from Turkey into northwest Syria has been contentious. The government of Bashar al-Assad wants all aid to go through Damascus and across conflict front lines from within Syria. U.S. officials have approved the first over-the-counter birth control pill, a major change that will broaden access for women and teenagers. The Food and Drug Administration decision on Thursday means drug maker Perrigo can sell its once-a-day pill, Opal, without a prescription. Philadelphia resident Dominique Moore had this reaction to the news.
Having women of all different sorts of backgrounds and money backgrounds being able to have access to such things is very important. Women should be able to have control over their bodies no matter what their situations are.
Previously, all birth control pills required a doctor's note. Perrigo won't start selling the pill until early next year. And Guatemala sank deeper into political turmoil on Thursday, the government's action against candidate Bernardo Arevalo, first suspending his Seed Movement party, then raiding the country's election tribunal offices after it certified election results, appeared to have backfired. The Constitutional Court, which is Guatemala's highest tribunal, granted a preliminary injunction to the Seed Movement, blocking its suspension. And the market for sriracha heating up. Prices are getting spicy because of a shortage of resources, according to the authorities behind that company that makes sriracha. For more news, we invite you to join us for our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African leaders at U.S.-Africa Business Summit call for the renewal of the AGOA trade deal.
It is also our earnest hope that in consonance with the letter and the spirit of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, the Biden administration will renew the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, initiative.
Refugees married to Kenyan citizens seek citizenship rights. Religious leaders in Malawi protest same-sex marriage. Zanzibar bars young men from braiding their hair. Sierra Leone's information minister says opposition lawmakers who boycott the parliament on Thursday betrayed their constituencies.
Today's parliament was attended by an opposition APC member of parliament. He was in parliament today. He subscribed to the oath of office. He participated in the election. So you cannot call that a one-party parliament.
And former American boxing champion Floyd Mayweather causes a political stir in Zimbabwe. Those stories plus Samson Omalley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders at the U.S.-Africa Business Summit in Botswana have urged renewal of the long-standing Africa Growth and Opportunities Act, also known as AGOA. The trade deal gives some African countries preferential or even tax-free access for their exports to the U.S. market. The agreement is due to expire in 2025, and African delegates at the summit want the deal renewed. Nkodise Dube reports from Gaborone.
Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi, addressing delegates gathered in Gaborone for the summit, led the pleas to Washington to renew the arrangement. Since it was put into place in 2000, the Africa Growth Opportunities Act, AGOA, has been credited with creating more than 46,000 jobs in Africa and bolstering exports to the U.S.
It is also our earnest hope that in consonance with the letter and the spirit of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, the Biden administration will renew the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, initiative, which expires in 2025. The AGOA renewal now with expanded mandates will give a strong signal and confidence to the markets and serve as a catalyst for Africa's industrialization and inclusion into the global value chain.
Flori Liza is the chief executive and president of the Corporate Council on Africa, which organizes the U.S.-Africa Business Summit. She says there is a need to examine the AGOA in light of an intra-continental trade deal, the Africa Free Trade Agreement.
The advent of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, AFCFTA, is fostering much closer economic and commercial integration on the continent, which will spur the creation of regional and continental value chains and increase value-added production across key sectors.
The Atlantic Council Africa Center produced a report titled The Future of U.S.-Africa Trade and Investment, which analyzes the future of the AGOA. The report was launched Wednesday at the U.S.-Africa Business Summit. Franny Lutia is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and the report's lead author.
So on extending or renewing AGOA, the idea there is to realize the potential of AGOA for long-term development through greater certainty, planning, and scaled-up support for capacity development and investment flows.
Not all African countries benefit from the AGOA, as some like Ethiopia, Mali, and Guinea were barred because of coups and human rights violations. South Africa's eligibility is being reviewed over the alleged sale of arms to Russia. Meanwhile, U.S. Development Finance Corporation Chief Executive Scott Nathan, who is leading the U.S. government delegation at the summit, pledged continued support for Africa.
The United States is focused on what we will do with African nations and people, not for African nations and people. As we work to deepen and expand our partnerships, amplify African voices, and support the empowerment of Africans.
The summit has drawn more than 1,300 delegates, including leaders from Eswatini, Lesotho, Mozambique, Niger, and Zimbabwe. Nkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Sierra Leone's information minister, Mohamed Rachman Suarez, says opposition party lawmakers who boycotted parliament on Thursday betrayed their constituents' desire to be represented. The parliament met for the first time yesterday after the June 24th elections. The Electoral Commission says the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, won a majority of seats 81 compared to 54 seats for the opposition All People's Congress, the APC party. However, the APC boycotted the proceeding and said it will not participate at any level of governance because it says the government tampered with the election results. Information Minister Suare says SLPP parliamentarians, along with one APC member, took their oaths of office and also elected a speaker.
The normal protocol demands that only one be able to subscribe to the oath of office and elect key officials of parliament. That was all done today. It's very unfortunate the APC chose to squander this opportunity. The people who voted for them at various levels were yearning for representation. They had aspirations. They had hope. They wanted their representatives to represent them in parliament, particularly to participate in lawmaking, to participate in oversight and perform other parliamentary functions. Sadly enough, they choose to betray their people and stay off parliament. It's unfortunate. But I am fully convinced that that decision will be reviewed in due course. The U.S. ambassador in a tweet yesterday called them to forget about the boycott and ensure that their people who voted for them are given a voice in parliament. So I hope common sense will prevail.
What do you say to those, Mr. Minister, who say that with this particular development, that Sierra Leone is now ruled by one party?
That is not true. I would say to them, they don't understand the dynamics. Today's parliament was attended by an opposition APC member of parliament, Honorable Mohamed Bangura, a one-time Minister of Information and Communications, and a one-time party leader of the media. He was in parliament today. He subscribed to the oath of office. He participated in the election, so you cannot call that a one-party parliament.
I did speak with an APC member of parliament, and I asked the question, if you're not satisfied with the election results, what do you intend to do? Do you intend to go to court? Say no, that the party is looking for engagement, that no one from the other side has engaged the APC. What do you say to that?
Constitutionally, the best recourse open to any aggrieved party after a general election is to go to court. The APC is quite aware of that. They have utilized the court. We have also done on several occasions, so they know what to do. On the argument that they are looking for engagement and they have not been engaged, well, now we hear them. We know that's what they are yearning to. That's what they're looking for. So the authorities will give it due consideration on the basis of its merit.
Mohamed Rachman Suare is Sierra Leone's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Rights groups in Kenya are campaigning for refugees married to Kenyans to obtain citizenship. The Kenyan constitution allows foreign nationals married to Kenyans to register for citizenship after 7 years of marriage, but they must have residency status to apply, and this policy locks out refugees. Juma Majanga reports from the Dadaab refugee camps.
On a sunny afternoon in the Hagadera camp, one of the several camps in the Dadaab refugee complex, Fuzia Mohammed is busy at her shop. The Somali refugee and mother of six says she has been married to a Kenyan man for more than 10 years, but has yet to be granted citizenship. Lack of Kenyan documents, she says, has affected her life and business. Mohammed says she is running the business to support her children and family. She says without a Kenyan ID, she cannot expand because she can't travel to Garissa town or Nairobi to buy supplies. Mohammed says she is forced to wait for goods that come to the camp, which is expensive. The Kenyan constitution gives foreign nationals married to Kenyans the right to apply for citizenship 7 years after marriage. However, a law passed by Parliament in 2011 adds an additional requirement that such individuals must have residency status in Kenya. This locks out refugees who do not have the same residency documents as other foreign nationals. Mohammed says it is pure discrimination because she is married to a Kenyan and has been denied the right to citizenship for more than 10 years. Haki na Sharia is a human rights advocacy group based in Garissa. It has gone to court seeking orders to remove what it calls administrative barriers so that refugees married to Kenyans can apply for citizenship. Mariam Jamal is a program officer at Haki na Sharia.
In most cases, these individuals are people who have lived here They have loved here. They have children here. So what does it really mean for them in the long run if they cannot access citizenship, despite the fact that their entire families are based here?
The Kenyan government has been pushing to better integrate refugees into society, although the law blocking their path to citizenship remains in place. Kenya's Commissioner for Refugee Affairs, John Burugu, says a government policy allowing refugees to live outside the camps will ease their burdens.
The socio-economic inclusion solves the issue of them wishing to be citizens, because what is maybe disadvantaging them is because of what we are currently running, which is the encampment.
Kenya hosts more than 700,000 refugees and asylum seekers representing 22 nationalities, according to the Department of Refugee Affairs. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Dadaab Refugee Camps, Kenya.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 14. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. Once again, the WhatsApp number is +1 202 258 3078. That's +1 202 258 3076. And we thank you for 60 years of support. Religious leaders in Malawi led street protest on Thursday against same-sex marriage. The action comes as a Dutch citizen and a transgender Malawian are challenging laws in Malawi's High Court against same-sex relations. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Hundreds of people in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre, braved cold weather Thursday to protest what they call the potential legalization of same-sex marriage in the country. The protesters came from both of the country's major religions, Christianity and Islam. They sang songs while carrying placards and banners denouncing same-sex marriage. Archbishop Thomas Lukunsusa led the protests in Blantyre. He says same-sex marriages are a sin and that allowing them would lead to extinction of the human race.
If we change the way we live as family, it means we will cease to exist. If we continue to marry a man and a man, surely the offspring will not come. No children will come. Then no life in the world, no life in Malawi.
The nationwide protest came as the Constitutional Court in Malawi continues to hear a case in which a Dutch national, Jan Willen Akista, and transgender Malawian woman, Jana Gonani, argue that Malawi's anti-homosexuality laws violate their fundamental rights, including privacy and dignity. Homosexuality is an offense in Malawi and punishable by a maximum prison sentence of 14 years. However, civil society organizations have voiced concerns about discrimination faced by lesbians, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer individuals in the country. Michael Kayatsa is the executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation. He says religious leaders have a right to hold demonstrations about anything they feel is a sin, but they should also consider the rights of other groups of people.
Our concern as human rights organizations is that these demonstrations will have negative implications on not only on the rights of LGBT persons, but it will also have negative implications on efforts to fight HIV.
Kayatsa says studies have shown that the prevalence rate of HIV and AIDS in those who engage in same-sex acts is about 40%, so discriminating against them would likely push the percentage. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Zanzibar this week passed a special law that prohibits men from braiding their hair. The executive secretary of the Council of Arts, Film and Culture was quoted as saying any man caught with braided hair would face a fine of 1 million shillings or about $400 US and 6 months imprisonment. However, a day after, the island's Minister of Information clarified that the ban only applies to Zanzibari youth. Natasha Issa is a Young African Leaders Initiative YALI fellow focusing on inclusion and advocacy. She tells me that the directive is an example of Zanzibar not wanting to deal with its problem of youth unemployment.
I cannot speak for the government on the rationale behind the ban on hair braiding. I believe they might have a reason as to why, but that has not been properly articulated or clarified for the public as of yet.
I read a second article after the law had been announced where the Minister of Information provided clarification. Why did she feel the need to do so?
James, I also read that article, and I do believe the government or the minister did not expect the backlash from the people regarding this law, and they felt the need that they needed to clarify and expound on it more. My view is this is another instance of an all too familiar conflation of causation versus correlation. Trying to police something that in reality is meaningless because of an unwillingness to address real societal problems. Zanzibar has a problem with youth employment, particularly young men. Furthermore, these men tend to be undereducated and fall into substance abuse and the less spoken sexual exploitation. Now, rather than dealing with those underlying issues, authorities have opted to attack the simplest thing, which they view as a symbol of the problem. The issue of morality in Zanzibar isn't because men are braiding their hair. No. The real morality failure is our institutions to create the opportunity of a bright future for our youth.
What are the Zanzibaris saying about this law?
My take is Zanzibaris don't really care. And we know that this is just posturing, which will soon be forgotten and the law will fall to the wayside.
Is there a particular penalty for this law?
Currently, the government has set the penalty at 1 million shillings, which is roughly around $400, for men who braid their hair.
Natasha Issa is a Young African Leaders Initiative YALI fellow focusing on inclusion and advocacy. She was speaking to me from Zanzibar City, Zanzibar. Former American boxing champion Floyd Mayweather is causing a political stir in Zimbabwe for donning a scarf with Zimbabwe national flag colors, which is widely associated with President Emmerson Mnangagwa. He also attended a ruling party election rally in Harare, organized by an aspiring lawmaker. His actions have sent tongues wagging as Zimbabwe is currently preparing for a crucial general elections on August 23rd this year. Noshlanhla Mloshwa is a regional member of the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. He tells Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service that Mayweather is not doing the right thing in Zimbabwe.
I think it would be exciting to see Floyd Mayweather, but not him being associated with the regime. Him visiting Zimbabwe, him donning the scarf that Iti Mnangagwa dons, it shows us that he is not here for us as Zimbabweans. He's here for the regime. He's a campaign tool.
What should he have done better than what you think he's doing right now?
I think he should have, if he was coming to Zimbabwe as a boxer, as a sportsman, it would have good if he comes being maybe sponsored by sports people, not being associated to the regime. It's difficult now for us to accept Mayweather or to even enjoy his visit because it has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with the campaigning of ZANU-PF at the present moment.
That was Nonhlanhla Mloshwa, a regional member of the Opposition Citizen Coalition for Change. He was speaking with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Ruling ZANU-PF activist Relief Gaule says Mayweather has a right to associate with any political party or organization in Zimbabwe.
There's nothing wrong with donning a scarf, exactly what was done by Floyd when he arrived in Zimbabwe. If those were ZANU-PF supporters, well, that much I don't know. But that scarf has got the Zimbabwean flag, national flag colors. There's nothing wrong with donning that scarf anyway. And looking at the weather in Zimbabwe, it's very cold today. And donning a scarf is part of covering our body when it's cold like this. So I see no reason why people should be worried about donning a scarf at all.
There are indications that opposition parties are saying by donning that scarf, it means that he is supporting ZANU-PF ahead of the general elections. What's your view on that?
We have a problem with the opposition. They always try and create something out of something that is not there.
I must believe Gaule, a ZANU-PF activist based in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. He was speaking with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Abidjan, where the Confederation of African Football conducted the official draw of the FIFA World Cup 2026 African preliminary qualifiers. A total of 54 African nations will compete for their available spots, with the qualifiers officially starting in November. Each group winner will qualify automatically, and the best four runners-up enter playoffs, with the winner going to Inter-Confederation playoffs, where two places will be up for grabs. The official draw comes just hours after the 45th CAF General Assembly, which was also attended by CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe and FIFA President Gianni Infantino in Abidjan.
The exciting things for us is Morocco has shown us. Morocco has made us proud. Morocco has indicated that indeed an African nation can go to the semi-final, and we are optimistic that at the next World Cup, an African nation will go one step further.
We will have all African countries participating in what will be an incredibly exciting and passionate qualification path to the World Cup 2026. We are looking forward to this draw, but then most importantly to the games and all the emotions that we'll feel in this incredible continent.
In tennis news, Tunisia's Ons Jabeur produced a superb comeback to beat Aryna Sabalenka from Belarus at Wimbledon in the women's semifinals. The sixth-seeded Tunisian came back from a set down to reach the women's singles finals at Wimbledon for a second straight year. The 28-year-old faced her toughest battle yet to win 6-7, 6-4, 6-3 in London on Thursday. She will now play on seeded Czech Markéta Vondrozova in the final.
I'm very proud of myself because maybe old me would have lost the match today and went back home already. But I'm glad that I kept digging very deep and finding the strength.
In basketball news, DR Congo is through to the semi-final stage of the ongoing FIBA African tournament in Angola. The defending champions narrowly beat the hard-fighting Nigeria 74 to 72 points on Thursday at the Payavio Motuas do Luanda to move one step closer to successfully defending the crown they won in 2019. In other results, Rwanda qualified for the semifinals thanks to a hard-fought 73-63 victory over host Angola. The hosts thus fail in their quest for a first African title, while Rwanda can afford to dream of a historic podium finish. In other results, Cote d'Ivoire booked their ticket for the semifinals thanks to a narrow 69-66 victory over Tunisia, while Morocco completes the semifinal quartet after beating Kenya 55-46 points on Thursday. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday morning.